From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange Monday held a press conference from his sanctuary in the Ecuadorian embassy in London. Today we bring you part one of that press conference.
First of all, let's background a little bit about WikiLeaks itself. I founded WikiLeaks 10 years ago. WikiLeaks specializes in obtaining and publishing and analyzing documents of historical, political, or ethical significance, preserving them before the public. We also fight to be able to continue on in our work by promoting freedom of the press more generally and the rights of whistleblowers and sources. WikiLeaks is entirely funded by our readers and publication sales, and that has been the case for over 10 years, apart from the initial funding, which came from myself personally. So first of all, some general comments. We'll get on to questions very quickly because I know that there's many reporters and members of the public who are deeply interested in this issue. I have read literally thousands of intelligence reports. WikiLeaks specializes in publishing a wide range of information, but that includes diplomatic and intelligence reports. The report, which was released on Friday, the principal author is the CIA, whose current head is John Brennan, is not an intelligence report. It does not have the structure of an intelligence report. It does not have the structure of a presidential daily brief. It is, frankly, quite embarrassing, I think, to the reputation of the US intelligence services to be putting out something that claims to be a report like that. This is a press release. It is clearly designed for political effect, and US intelligence services have been politicized by the Obama administration in the production of this report and a number of other statements. Now, that's unfortunately not surprising. We've seen that in the past many times, from the Gulf of Tonkin to the outrageous high confidence combined intelligence report, which stated falsely that there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, and that was the need to go to war with Iraq. So I want to go through just very briefly some of the unusual aspects of this report. So first of all, there's only about 5 pages of analysis out of the some over 20 pages in the report. The perhaps bulk of the words is a 2012 open source center analysis on RT, which has been appended. Now, the open source center was shut down, in my view, a mistake. But the open source center, it was a part of the CIA that simply read the news, that means, and what people are saying on Twitter, open sources, not obtained from any secret information, and produced reports from that. So that is apparently designed to pad out the report. Now, if we look at the what I think is the clearest politicization of the report, it is those parts which reference Russian state intentions in relation to Donald Trump. No evidence of anything is presented anywhere in the report, but to me it seems that the critical question here is whether the allegation is that Russian intelligence services themselves, or people under their direction, hacked the Democratic National Party and John Podesta with the intent of favoring Donald Trump. Now, even if you accept the Russian intelligence services hacked Democratic Party institutions in the United States, and it is normal for the major intelligence services to hack each other's political parties, major political parties, on a constant basis to gain intelligence. That includes France, Russia, Israel, China, and especially the United States. So even if you accepted that, that Russian hackers were in there, and no evidence is provided itself in the report, then you have to ask the question, what was the intent of those Russian hacks, and do they connect to our publications, or is it simply incidental? Now, as we have already stated, WikiLeaks sources in relation to the John Podesta emails and the DNC leak are not members of any government. They're not state parties. They do not come from the Russian government. But let's look at the chronology. So the Podesta emails that we released, the ones that we released during the election, are dated up to March of this year. The US intelligence services and the consultants for the DNC say that the Russian intelligence services started hacking the Democratic, the DNC, in 2015. Now, Trump is clearly not on the horizon in any substantial manner. In 2015, he hadn't even nominated for the primary. By the time of March 2016, Donald Trump is not viewed to be a potential serious contender in the 2016 US presidential election. In fact, everyone viewed, including WikiLeaks, that he would very likely lose. So when you look at the CIA report, you'll notice that it deliberately obscures its assessments as to intentions and timeframes. And that is a key question, and the failure to come out openly about what has happened with the timeframe shows you the politicization of this report. Further in the report, the CIA states that it is, rather the combined report states that it cannot, it doesn't know when the DNC was hacked. James Clapper, the head of the DNI, who is in theory in charge of all 17 or 16 US intelligence agencies, the DNI itself being the 17th, has previously stated that the DNI, the US intelligence community, is not aware of when WikiLeaks obtained its material, or when the sequencing of our material was done, or how we obtained our material directly. So there seems to be a great fog in the connection to WikiLeaks. So let's look at some of the conflation going on. First, there was a clear political attempt in the US press to conflate our publications and alleged hacks of the DNC with attacks on the US voting system. And that led to 53% of Democrats, according to polling, believing that the Russians had actually hacked the vote itself, the voting machines, and or the vote counting system, and in that manner elected Donald Trump. Then there was another conflation, which is the publications in other media, such as The Hill, Politico, and on sites such as DC Leaks, with WikiLeaks publications. WikiLeaks publications are a separate story, entirely different material published by us, emails, and even the even in this report by the NSA, CIA, and FBI, making a finding, no surprise to us, that they were not able to determine any forgeries in WikiLeaks publications. So our record for accuracy over the last 10 years of perfect accuracy in our publications is preserved. In this case, the Podesta and DNC emails are authenticated not just by us, not just by a cryptographic system, which we use called DKIM, but now also by the CIA, FBI, by the CIA, FBI, NSA, and ODNI. And so one might reflect back to when the election was on, and also slightly afterwards, when Donna Brazile, now the chair of the DNC, falsely stated that our publications were fake, which exposed her corruptly feeding debate questions to Hillary Clinton. It shows that the vice presidential candidate for Hillary Clinton himself lied when he said that WikiLeaks publications about him were falsified. They were not. And similarly for another number of other Democratic Party officials and strategists and spokespeople, those people were lying to the public when they said that there were any forgeries in our publications. And now I think we might go to the first question.
Okay, so the first question today for you is from Shafat Mosvi, who asks, on a scale of 1 to 10, how fabricated is the CIA report on the US elections?
Well, that's an interesting question, because I would say that most of this so-called intelligence report is not even fabricated. That is, it doesn't even make assertions, for the most part, that rise to the level of fabrications, because they're not evidence, or it uses speculative terms and admits its own speculation. And it engages in sneaky conflations. For example, there's reportage in the New York Times from US officials saying that they say that our materials came from a hacking group, not a state, but a hacking group, then saying that this hacking group was somehow endorsed in some manner by the Russian intelligence services. But you see words in this CIA report like relayed, or approving of relaying, creating quite a vague description of what may have happened with our publications. Now, if you want to ask this question, how good a report is it as an intelligence report out of 1 to 10, or how much evidentiary weight does it have? The evidentiary weight is literally zero. There is no evidence of any kind supplied. The closest thing that comes to that is open source reporting that some official in Russia speaking on TV said that they were happy that Hillary Clinton lost. But I mean, anyone can do that.
Okay. Once again, you can submit your questions by hashtag at AskWL. We're moving on to our next question, which is from AJ Vincents, who's an online contributor to 5280 magazine, who asks, your whole premise has been that you don't know sources and therefore can't endanger them. But now you say that you don't know your source. How would you respond to that?
We haven't said whether we know or don't know our sources. We have made one statement, which is that our sources in the US election-related matter are not a state party. WikiLeaks speaks about its sources, obviously, with incredible care. We have a perfect record in never having done anything to divulge our sources, and that's a record we want to keep. That's why sources across the world, including within the US government, trust WikiLeaks to protect them. Now we have at various times where we felt it was safe to do so, said that a source is a military whistleblower, or that they have one property or another, but we are generally reluctant to get into any kind of discussion. This is the same policy that US intelligence takes with its sources, generally refusing to confirm or deny any property about its sources. But we think that in this case, it does not sufficiently threaten our sources to make this very bland disclosure.
Okay, Carol from CNN has submitted a question. Is WikiLeaks sure that the go-between didn't get the material from the Russian government, or a private cyber hacking group acting on orders by the Russian government or entities?
Well, we can't play 20 questions with our sources gradually narrowing down the ambit of who they are, when they are, what country they were in, etc. For the obvious reasons. Each piece of information you disclose about a source narrows the scope of any investigation.
Okay. Again, you can submit questions by hashtag AskWL. Julian, there's been a lot of questions coming in.
I just have to say that that if it was the case, we're concerned about protecting our sources. Now, there's obviously, if our sources were, for example, a state, we would have a lot less concern in attempting to protect them.
Okay. So moving on, Julian, there's a lot of questions coming in regarding proof of life. These are questions that keep coming up, and I think now would be a good time for you to respond to this issue.
I'm going to give a talk on Reddit tomorrow, where I'll deal with such questions. Just in brief, it has been quite a difficult time from the US election onwards. Slightly before the US election onwards, there has been a lot of pressure of different kinds, which we said was occurring, and as you some of you are aware, the internet here in the embassy where I have political asylum was cut off in relation to that pressure. Ecuador and John Kerry deny that, but our sources say that that is the case. But I'll speak about that tomorrow on Reddit.
Okay, question now from Pist CU. What is the most important thing we can do before Obama leaves office?
Well, this is absolutely critical. Past administrations of both the Democrat and Republican flavors have engaged in mass destruction of records as they left office. We are told that destruction of records is occurring now in different parts of the Obama administration, in different departments or agencies. That's what happens when an administration leads office. Our philosophy is that such information is a part of history. It belongs legally and philosophically to the American people, and more broadly, insofar as the United States interacts with the world, it belongs to people of the world. It is part of human history, and the destruction of major archives of human history, frankly, should be formally listed as a crime against humanity, because those archives belong to humanity. They're what we use to understand the world around us, to discover new political theories and observations, to build our institutions, etc. They are part of the history of humankind, and to destroy them is an absolutely egregious act. One understands the political motivation for it, but to eliminate small political risks by destroying major elements of history is frankly an obscenity, and so we have put out a reward for $30,000 for information leading to the arrest or exposure of anyone engaged in such destruction of historical records. Our request to system administrators in the Obama administration, and this goes for other administrations around the world as well, is take the data now. Just take it now, keep it under your bed or with your mother, and then you can give that to WikiLeaks or other journalists at your leisure. Get hold of that history and protect it, because that is something that belongs to humanity and does not belong to a political party.
Okay, moving on then, we have a question submitted by Andrew_Gamaley. Julian, how are you doing? How is your health? How much longer do you think you will be able to survive in the embassy?
Well, it's a difficult physical environment, obviously, to be detained for 6 years illegally without charge, even though there have been two UN formal findings this year that is illegal and must stop. It continues on. On the other hand, I am very committed to this work that I'm doing, so it gives me great energy to continue, and I'm sure that's true for all the rest of the WikiLeaks team.
Okay. Benem94 asks, what would you say to people who see WikiLeaks' recent activity as an open endorsement of Trump?
Look, before the US election, intentionally before the before November 8th, I put out an editorial on behalf of WikiLeaks and explaining exactly why we were doing what we were doing. So before one candidate or another won. Now, let's look at this from the position of WikiLeaks. We thought, just like everyone, based on the opinion polling, that Hillary Clinton was almost certain to win. In the end, it was this, apart from her qualities as a candidate, it was this opinion polling that was her undoing, because the presentation was that she was guaranteed to win, and as a result, cashed up funders only gave $1.2 billion formally to her campaign. If they had thought that it was lion ball, that it was 50-50 odds of who was going to win, then they probably would have ponied up another $5 billion to make sure that she won. Now, let's look at this from the position of WikiLeaks. WikiLeaks specializes in opening government records and those of major corporations. Hillary Clinton's been in government, the Obama administration's been in government. We published Hillary Clinton's cables, her emails. We've indexed a great deal of content and stitched it together so people can explore it to understand how this major power structure of the US government works and the various establishments that revolve around it. So as a result, we became domain experts on the State Department. We've published more than 3 million State Department cables, and to a degree, Hillary Clinton itself. So we are we are trusted by people who understand the value of such materials to bring them to us, and we have strongly encouraged expanding our collection of materials that relate to the State Department and its personalities. If we look at what was in WikiLeaks' interests in terms of an institution trying to deal with an array of threats against it, or what was in my personal interest as editor, we were creating, and we knew, creating substantial conflict between us and the person we expected to be the next president. So we understood that we were putting ourselves in a more persecuted condition by relentlessly exposing this material, increasing the risk for us, not decreasing them at all. But, you know, in relation to Trump, just speaking as an analyst, it's an interesting situation. He's the U.S. population turned against the elites, for want of a better word, in the United States. When the elites don't listen to the population stops listening to elites. And as they pushed against Donald Trump so aggressively, which was principally heard through media elites, but also others coming into the play, I think that the population saw that, well, their social conflict is with these elites. And what the elites really don't like is this guy, Donald Trump. So they ended up voting for Trump as a way of delivering into D.C. Something that the existing media and D.C. establishment was appalled by. So rather than necessarily a collaborative endeavor, it was to push down those existing walls. And what happens with President-elect Trump going forward is quite unclear. There's a lot of very poor cabinet appointments. There's a couple of interesting ones, but it certainly loosened up the political situation in DC, possibly in a very bad way, and in areas possibly in a good way.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.